Hi, everyone. It's Judy Warner. Thanks for joining us again today on the On Track podcast. Today, we have a returning guest who is Eli Hughes of T-Zero. If you were able to join us at All Team Live, you'll know that Eli came and talked about crossing the chasm and how to become a full stack hardware engineer. And today we're going to tackle a topic, which is how to be a really intentional and thoughtful engineer in a post-COVID era. So lean in, enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media. Hi, Eli. Good to see you again, my friend.
Hi, Judy. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining me again. You and I tend to go down these rabbit holes on these subjects, but when we talked last week, I thought this conversation was worth sharing. And I've always really appreciated you and how you think very holistically about engineering. So why don't we kick off by you just introducing yourself and then telling us a little bit about T-Zero for those who maybe didn't catch your last podcast.
Well, thank you for having me on again. So I'm Eli Hughes, one of the co-founders and chief technical officer of T-Zero. So T-Zero, we build an ultrasound acoustics-based probe for measuring fluids. We started in the beer brewing industry, monitoring fermentation, but have kind of grown into other industries such as like process chilling. And we're also involved in connecting people to the cloud. So connecting sensors to the cloud so they can kind of get information anytime, anywhere.
Well, what I wanted to talk to you about and sort of think through and tee up some learning for our listeners today was talking about, this COVID era, this post-COVID era we're in is really changing the world, in real time. And I know that's changed a lot of things for engineers like you, and particularly in that startup environment. And, we talked about some of the problems that have sort of arisen. There's some always opportunities, right? And opportunities and challenges during these times. So let's talk through some of the challenges that have arisen and then some things, sort of workarounds that you've developed with yourself and your team on how to do maybe a little bit better job at this. So one thing I know you talked to me was about communication. So why do you see that as sort of uniquely challenging in this environment we're in, working remotely?
Engineers, and I'll focus kind of on engineers specifically, because I think of myself in the way I like to work is that it's a combination of sometimes engineers like to work on their stuff alone. They like to twiddle and do what they need to do and be left alone. The reality is like the dream was always, I'll be left alone forever and work on things. But that kind of happened and no one likes it actually. And it's hard to work together. At the same time, there's always the need. And I find out, especially with my colleagues, when I'm working on something, let's say I'm ready to route a circuit board. That's something I very much enjoy with a cup of coffee, put on some music and do it alone. I just need to work through it. But there's other times, maybe earlier on the process, where we're working out different aspects of the design and having real time communication. So for example, with Nick, the mechanical engineer, other co-founder, we can solve problems so quickly just by being right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's challenging now because you talk through problems. And this is a challenge I think not like larger companies have, even in a non-COVID era where you're in different buildings. And
right.
You'd be surprised how quickly just being right next to each other and just talking things out. That's why I think now just checking in is really important. Starting some of these conversations are as simple as, how you doing today? What can I do to help? And it can be somewhat of a rhetorical question, but it could be practical as well. I think sometimes when you're working alone on the island, just knowing that someone else, that you're not working in this void, that someone can be there to look at your output and be there to help, can make all the difference. Because I don't know, I find sometimes when I'm working, even if I kind of have a good idea of what I'm doing, if I don't feel like what I'm doing is needed, that the motivation factor just goes right down the tubes. And
yeah,
if you can be that for someone else to make them feel like what they're doing is purposeful and needed, I mean, I feel like this energy, like sometimes you get this energy when you're working around other people that you all kind of build off each other, and you kind of leave that conversation with, you know, I have this purpose, even if it's for today. That can make all the difference in the world, especially if you're alone.
Yeah, I think so too. And even in some of the work I've done last night, literally I made this call because I was working on just a single slide, and I was in my head so dang long that I didn't really need a solution. I just needed a sounding board and someone to echo back something to me. And as soon as I talk for like 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, thanks. Bye. Got it. You know?
Oh yeah. I find that, I don't know, we kind of get in all our own bubble, and especially when we're coming up with some sort of solution, that just having someone else to listen is huge. Yeah. And it's not that much different than going to like a counselor. It's like, sometimes they're there to listen and repeat what you say. Then right. When you hear what you say, whether it be engineering or not, you may find you really like it, or like, you know, maybe I should breathe, or maybe I overcomplicated something that didn't need to be, because it's not being received right. And that's where the communication means someone needs to receive the message the way you intended it. And that's hard. Another thing and that I found really useful for myself, and I think it's a good way to open conversation when maybe you feel it shouldn't be opened, or maybe you don't feel like something's being received, is it kind of goes back to kindergarten. I remember my daughter in kindergarten, she would come home and say, "Daddy, you're not using I statements. You're using you statements, saying you did this or you did that." When just simply, it's as simple as that, saying, "Here's what I saw. Here's how I feel. Here's what I observed." Because a lot of times, especially over, whether it be a chat window or via, even in prose, when you use the word you, that can be, while it might not be intended to be, I don't know, a little bit rough, it can be received that way, right, as if you're like the target. When a lot of times even approaching with saying, "Here's how I feel," and just, you don't need to qualify it. You just hear, you say, "I feel this way," and leave it at that. And you don't need to add a whole lot to it. Just say, "I don't like this," and leave it at that sometimes is good enough.
Right.
Or, "I like this." And the other thing I would add is we all as humans tend to say when we don't like things and not say when we like things. I do think it's important, even at the expense of maybe being too chatty, is when you see something you like, just say, "Hey, I really like this," because that can go a long way.
And sometimes we just think that in our head, you know, and we don't say it out loud.
Well, I'll give you a really practical example. And I don't know, I really feel for some of the developers, even at Altium. So I'm on the beta list and play around with some of the new software, and even on the main forum, 99% of what you read on there is, "I don't like this. This is wrong." And there was a new feature that I saw. I just took a minute to say, "Hey, there's nothing wrong. I just happen to really like it." Because I feel that when you don't have some of that mixed in, I know engineers tend to stay away from that. They only want to say, "Here's the problems," but it can be, saying you like something is just as important, because the people that are making the decisions on which way things are going, if they never hear that, you just don't know. Like, it's really important to say what you like, because if no one says it, no one really has any good data.
Well, and if you're just getting criticism all the time, how much do people want to engage with you if all they're telling you? And, you know, you can see how this happened. Engineers are puzzle solvers, right? They solve problems, right? So it's a natural human tendency, I think, to go after the problem and you know, but if you're going to dig for gold, you're not going looking for dirt. You're going looking for the gold, right?
So,
you know, I think that's a good point.
But I kind of always bring in, and I mentioned this at Altium Live, is that I think it's a true statement. Humans, we're each humans. We're not, we are biological machines, but there's a lot of error built into everything. You can't ignore that. While the things we're building are these digital machines that follow certain rules, the machines that we interact with, the other humans, are much more complicated, and you can't forget that. Like, you've got to understand that, because we have to interact with each other or else it doesn't work. You can't apply the same rules to a circuit board as you do to your relationship with the design team. It's not going to work.
You know, I don't think this is something we talk about a lot, but I think it's important, which is why I wanted to do this podcast with you, is there's a lot of value added when you basically, especially at this time when we're all working remote, if we're not in a Zoom call and we're texting and emailing more than ever, that we can't see each other's body language or feel the energy in a room or any of that. And so it's really easy to misunderstand each other. And I think with engineering, you know, this is a time that's really calling for soft skill development, you know, like soft skills for hardware, right?
Exactly.
If you want to build really good hardware, you need to develop some of these things and make sure you're sort of filling your tool chest, you know, with tools that are really, they've probably always been important, but now they're uber important because the isolation thing that we're all trying to just get through.
I mean, people are going to be more on edge right now just because,
right.
Just because you're stuck, whether you're stuck at home or your supply chain is totally gummed up, everyone is definitely going to be a little more edgy. So taking a little bit time to recognize that, it's definitely a human thing. And you've got to work on that interface between you and everyone else, because it could make or break how a project goes. You know, because everyone wants it to go smoothly. Right. In a lot of these things, it's not like it takes a lot of time. I don't like ever hearing the excuse, well, this is extraneous, we don't need to do it. Well, this adds almost no time to be courteous.
Exactly. And simple please and thank yous, and I appreciate that.
You wouldn't believe, I have, and it's too many stories for you know, this podcast, just by simply doing that, by adding those words, you wouldn't be able, you know, there's a fine line between, like, and I know in the security world, it's called like the social engineering aspect of, like, bad actors will actually do this to get what they want. But right. Simply by doing that, you find that getting what you want out of other people is actually really easy. You don't have to, it's not like pulling teeth, just by figuring out how do they listen, by listening to them and giving them what they need to understand, you know, what the problem is, makes all the difference.
Right.
And it's no different, and I brought this up in the Altium Live, it's no different when you have chip A and chip B and you're trying to make them talk. You've got to understand, how does chip A work and chip B to link them together? Humans are no different.
Right. No, that's a good point. By the way, for our listeners, I'm going to put Eli's talk about crossing the chasm in the show notes. So if you didn't have a chance to attend, and by the way, all the Altium Live, I'll put them all down there for you guys. I'll put all the recordings from Altium Live so you can dig into those later. During this time, you mentioned something about shifting targets. What exactly did you mean by that, sort of becoming a dynamic in this environment?
Well, like everything with when you have like a you know, some sort of global problem and everyone's perception of what the problem is different. Most humans work on psychology, whether it's how you buy things or sell things. I mean, the whole economy, while there is certain, you know, fact to how everything works, there's a lot of psychology like sitting on top of that.
Yeah.
So people's buying habits, the fact that a lot of restaurants are closed down. In our case, when we're selling to breweries, you know, a connected hardware product, there's definitely a line between of, hey, this is a really cool product that we want to have, but right now the perception is we don't need to have it because we've got all these other things. We're just worried about staying open and making sure we can ship product.
Right.
So if you're selling a product into that makes your life more difficult. And especially when it's a neat product, like say a fermentation monitor for a brewery, yeah. you want to sell it. But the reality is, okay, we're going through this, you know, global pandemic where even if a business's bottom line isn't that much different, the perception of all of your things around you is. And so you may not want to invest in, you know, new capital. So you've got to kind of be on your toes to be listening to, well, you don't need to have this thing, but is there something else you need to have that will, that is really important? And at T0, we definitely heard that. So over the summer, as kind of things kind of evolved, it looked like it got a little better. Well, there's a time constant to all this. By the time the fall came around, everyone's saying, well, it's a want to have, not a need to have. But we heard what through conversations and listening, well, can this sensor work in this other context? We need to have this. And so we quickly said, you know what? You guys have been kind of saying that all along, and maybe you do need to have this. Maybe it's not as cool as the other thing, but we can build that for you. And just making sure you're listening all the time. Engineers, we want to build things that are cool to us. But yes. if you're not listening to what your customers want, that, you know, it's going to be a much harder life. And I think certainly in a pandemic, just spending a lot of time listening to other people and what they need can go a long way. And it's not always about the engineering. It's about what are the actual problems at a high level and,
yeah,
you know, being willing to listen to that.
And just be present in sort of like this cultural moment, you know, where microbreweries may or may not be able to stay open, or like you said, they may be hesitant to do capital spend, but what are those critical things? So I think that's really good advice.
And also too, and this is where bridging the gap of being an engineer to selling product is, you may have the best product in the world that meets every technical specification, but the timing, like it's the right product at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And be willing to say, you know what, you put in all this effort and that's okay. But 2 years from now may be the perfect time. You got it. You know, it's okay. But right now the timing may tell you that your product with some tweaks may be perfect for something else, whether it may be in, you know, pharmaceutical or whatnot, that there's somewhere else you should be going.
Yeah. So what I really hear you saying is these are volatile times. So be flexible and, you know, like I sort of said, be flexible. And, you know, early on in when the pandemic went on, you know, everybody's like, the sky is falling. But, you know, over time, we've seen unbelievable opportunities come into play, you know, in this case of T0, it was chillers, right?
Yep.
So that you changed from the fermentation to the chiller, which was a critical need. Altium, we just got lucky with the timing of the release of Altium 365 because people needed to collaborate remotely. And so there are opportunities there. And I think as an engineer, as you're flexible to also be positive and look for that has opened up opportunities to solve other sort of corollary things that may open up whole new opportunities. So it's.
Yeah. Like I've also found too, it's really easy to be negative. It's the easiest thing in the world. It's the hardest thing to be positive, but through any kind of challenge globally over time, some of the neatest things came out of that. And they weren't done, said, here's a set of specs, we're going to build it and sell it. It was the result of, I really like the word of almost serendipity. You just don't know. And I find that engineers, and myself included, in any time I feel like, I don't know, I'm dangling in the breeze, I don't feel like I'm grounded, is draw some boxes around what I'm doing and saying, I have all these things. Let me just fix a few things, saying, I can't change this boundary. Like right now, we can't change the fact that COVID is here. We can't change the fact that people are sick, that the vaccine is some time away. Knowing that's true and you're not going to change it, what can you do? And I think the same thing even applies in any design. I think the worst thing you can do for an engineer is saying, you have no constraints, you have no budget, you can pick any chip you want, let's make it work. I find saying, here is a brick wall, like start here.
Yeah.
And engineers are super creative working within that constraint.
Right.
And in a lot of times today, the challenge is there's fewer constraints because you have all these tools and things to use that, whether it be a new chip or a new design tool, sometimes constraining it can be comforting, right? Because, you know, okay, this is the constraint, let's work to it.
Well, we all work better in structure, in some kind of framework. You know, if, I mean, imagine driving down the freeway with no paint on the ground, you're right, no lanes, or, you know, children work well with some structure. So yeah, they know where the limits are. I mean, we're adults and we're no different. So,
You think you are, but sometimes just knowing it's this balance of having some freedom and some structure. But I think creativity, really, the brain, whatever it is and however it works, sometimes when you're forced into that box, you're forced to iterate on things that, because you don't know the solution, you're relying on that random thing to come in. And you don't have that until there's somewhat of a box for you to work into.
Right. And it could be a big box, but at least you know where the boundaries are.
Yeah, whether it be budget or something technical. And it is important, though, to say is when that box is too small, when you constrain things too tight, that gets hard. But I do know one of the partners in T0, he brought up one of his famous sayings is, nothing motivates a person like knowing they're going to hang in the morning. You're going to find out, you know, it's kind of a funny thing to say, but when you know you have that something that you've got to make this work, you know, sometimes the best engineering can kind of come out of that.
Yeah. We don't like being that stressed out, but sometimes it makes us laser focused, right?
Oh,
it'll
focus
you really quick.
Oh, all those other things, they just don't matter.
They just fall away. Right. So yeah. I think there is some of that going on at this time is some focus, because otherwise, like you said, mentally, we'd all go a little cuckoo. You mentioned a little bit earlier about the difference between what you want to have and what you actually need to have. Like, how do you manage that sort of in these times of, in context of whatever constraints you're facing at T0?
You know, that it's tough, because every time you have any kind of project, you build up in your head of what this thing's going to look like, how it's going to perform, not only technically, but in the market, and you kind of build this up in your mind, and it's fiction. Like, it's 100% fiction, and it's good, because I think it's good to imagine how you things want to be. But the thing that I found that I like to start out with, if I can have it anyway, how would it be? But then from there, start adding those constraints and saying, here's how I want it to be, but here's how it needs to be based upon reality. But I do think it's good to start from the former, because you don't want to throw certain things out too early. But at the same time, if your boundaries change, don't get too hung up on the fact that things that are beyond your control have changed. It's okay. Even sometimes when you've put a lot of effort into it, because it's that whole sunken cost kind of fallacy as well. I do this all the time, where I have X amount of hours into this thing, I can't possibly change the direction now. Well, the reality is you may be forced to, and it's okay, because you might have to think different about it. Or that's when it's time. That's when the checking in aspect of kind of checking your assumptions with someone else. Like, I have a software developer I work with, who is versed in hardware, but he's a software developer. And anytime I'm doing anything software related, even if I know the solution, I'll still ask, because what comes out of that conversation is pretty valyable, because it's like your example of the whatever presentation. You just needed someone else to either reiterate back, or sometimes I even say, I love it when someone tells me something sucks. Like,
yeah,
just
totally.
I know I'm not going to feel bad, because I've built a relationship with that person in real life that I know it's not out of malice, but they're just saying, here's what the problems are.
Right.
And hearing that is really good. And something that kind of came off, and this is a little bit in a different direction, but I wanted to repeat because I was having a conversation with Chris Denny earlier this week of Worthington Assembly. Trust becomes before fact, which for engineers, they're going to be like, absolutely not. You always lay out the facts first, and the facts are what matter. But I can't think of any situation where you come first to the table with hard, cold, hard facts where there isn't trust before that happens, because you can have all the facts on your side. It doesn't matter if the other person inside the table doesn't trust you. And that's one of those soft skills. And there is actually a technical kind of analogy to that. Anytime you go to a web page, this web page has all these facts they're going to deliver to you. You go to Altium.com. There's all these things about the software. Well, the first thing that happens in any connection is, do I trust the server that this is coming from? Secure socket layer is a protocol. That's the first thing it's established, is trust. That am I getting this from who I, and relationships with your other developers, building trust, which is that soft skill. I think that's above the fact of that, the facts that you're delivering to each other, because everyone makes mistakes, but if we trust that we're all on the same team and working the same thing, I think that trumps everything.
Well, you're reminding me of a Altium Live keynote that Jeremy Blum gave 2 or 3 years ago. And I think I'm going to throw it in the show notes. And it kind of caught everybody off guard. And he was talking about empathic engineering. And it was exactly that, like being aware of what was sort of on everybody's plate, you know, the who was going to use it, the upstream and downstream stakeholders, you know. It's very much in line with what you're saying. And it's like, wait, I came to learn how to route, you know,
exactly. And
what he was trying to say is take the camera lens back a bit, you know, before you jump in there, because you will just plow over people with your facts, you know, like and your data.
Here's another analogy. Well, I think an example where I think, once you hear it, everyone can understand this, is that when you go to the store and you whip out your credit card or your cash, and I go to the grocery store and I buy my jug of milk, and there's this transaction that happens, like all these transactions, we have the Federal Reserve, right, that manages at a very high level our monetary system. And you can get every fact you want out of, they have a balance sheet, and an economist can look at all these facts of an economy and make plots of the blue in the face. But if there isn't this element of trust below that whole system, none of that, even the whole thing, we've seen time, it falls apart, whether or not you had facts on your side or not.
Right.
And I think in engineering, the same thing applies, is that sometimes when you have problems or you're trying to make a team work, you've got to step back for a second. While facts do matter and all these technical things really do matter, the system as a whole needs to work. And there has to be this underlying trust in a team for the whole thing to even work. I know at T0, I will tell everyone, I think the reason it works is because, not because we all think we're the smartest, it's just everyone's good at they do, and we trust each other implicitly that the decisions are being made. While we may make mistakes and we're not pointing fingers, I have trust that they're doing it for the right reasons.
Right.
And mistakes are made, we're going to fix them. And we're going to work together as a team to make it work.
Right.
Beyond anyone's technical skill, that trust to me is why I bought into it and why I keep doing it. And why I only want to work on teams where that's the case.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, you're sort of getting into, I think what I hear you saying is sort of check your ego at the door, right? And engage in a way to where you can build on that foundation of trust, be open, like you said earlier, to like feedback on maybe some blind spots you have. Sometimes we're so sure we're right. And then it's like, we'll get a little fact and like, oh gosh, it was totally wrong. And if you're going to die on that hill, it's humiliating when you realize, oh, I didn't have that one little piece of information, and now I got mud on my face.
just be humble, accept failure when it's your fault, say it's your fault, be willing to accept the consequences of it. And you'd be surprised when you have a team of people who aren't afraid to make mistakes because they know when a mistake is made, we're in the boat together to fix it. And the person at the root of the mistake says, hey, it's my mistake, I'll fix it. And this leads me out, like, here's a practical takeaway, and I'll relate this to circuit board and PCB technology. Is I have a philosophy, and this is something that I believe, I feel is true, is that, so large organizations, if you have many people on a team, you might have a librarian, say, working on a schematic symbol or a part. You might have a design engineer putting it together, and maybe someone on the layout team, you know, laying the board out. And eventually this thing comes in. And most boards, Rev A doesn't work. Something's wrong. And sometimes it can be tracked back to the person, the librarian, who made the part. And I have a philosophy that the person who makes the part is the person who stays the weekend to cut jumpers to fix the thing when it's done, because you end up, you only make that mistake a few times until you realize how bad it is. But it also builds this trust that the person upstream in the chain, if they make a mistake, they're going to be there to help. It's not like I threw it over the wall. It's not my problem.
Right.
And I think that's a part of a team, is everyone knows that we're not here to point fingers of like, yeah, you did me wrong and I'm going to spend the weekend. It's just, we all have this trust that, hey, we're all going to make mistakes. No one's warts look any worse than anyone else, but we're here to help each other, and we're going to work through it. As long as we all come to the table understanding we're all responsible for our piece, and we're going to share some responsibility upstream and downstream.
Well, and I think that's sort of like being on a sports team, right? Everybody wants to bring their A game, right? And you want to challenge each other to be excellent. And sometimes a role like a librarian, which could seem like a thankless, not that important job until Rev A doesn't come back right, you know? And then I think it's important that everybody along the chain realizes that what they're doing really does matter. Right. And they got to bring their A game, even if it feels a little bit like a thankless part of the overall.
I don't know. And that's where we're meeting the real world of getting a board built, with this whole idea of purpose, of everyone in the chain also needs to feel like they have a positive contribution. You know, I've heard anecdotes, not that I was alive and was there, but you know, in the original space program where the president said, okay, we're going to make it to the moon by the end of the decade, everyone working in that chain said, we're making it there. And not on my watch is this going to be a problem. Like, whether it be the technician tightening a bolt down to the engineer with their slide rollout, having that sense of purpose and that we have this thing that we're all part of and we're going to make this work. And I think when you can get teams together that have that feeling, you're unstoppable. Like, well, when you believe in the mission, not in the technology, not in the little pieces, but in what you're all doing there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned that, Chris, earlier, that's when ordinary people do the extraordinary things. You don't need to be brainiacs, but yeah.
Well, and that was such a lofty goal, you know, to get to the moon or, you know, get a rocket off the ground. And it was a matter of national pride. And at that point, it's exciting to be one part of that journey, right? I think about Lee Ritchie, I'll share that link too, where he talks about making the circuit board on his dining room table for Apollo 11, I think, or 11 or 13. And he etched it in his kitchen sink, you know, made the sink turn blue, and then drilled it on the dining room table and put holes in his table and ticked his wife off. But that some of those circuit boards are still up on the moon. Right. And so that was just one little piece, but all these years later, it was a significant piece, and the hole didn't work without it. So I think that's one of those dreamy things, but really on a smaller scale where electronics runs the world, all of our little pieces actually really matter.
Yeah. And that's where I think in stories like that, I never heard that story.
It's a good
and
story.
We always tend to think, well, the things that are out doing that must have went through this long, lengthy procedure. And like, no, like sometimes it was that there was the need, the purpose, the desire. And that's where the soft skills intersecting with the hard engineering, taking someone who really knows the engineering part of it, like Lee Ritchie, combining it with the need, purpose, communication. My God, is that it's one piece you can't have without the other. You need both. And if you can realize that and get teams together, I think that's why, you know, whether you think he's crazy or not, Elon Musk, like,
oh, I know.
Whether you think he's totally nuts, he has the ability to convince people to buy flamethrowers and bottles of tequila to be a fun part of, you know, the idea of getting to Mars, right?
Well, and I will tell you, I got a front row seat to some of that because I sold boards for a short time to their RF team. Mm. And so I got to go through that building a few times, and it is so inspiring. And they have an elevator that goes up to this second level part of their building. It's actually a cafeteria. And there is a an Iron Man, because they equate him with Tony Stark, right? And so there's an Iron Man suit, like the cool factor. And then I remember on one of their earlies, I don't know if it was the one of the Dragon 9, the 9 booster Falcon rocket boost, I was watching it online because they stream it, and you can see like Mission Control right there in the building, and it's really cool. And I was like face pressed to the glass, right? And I'm like, this is so cool. And so I watched it live stream, and when that rocket got off the ground, there was everyone in the plant was circled around this glass Mission Control, you know, with these big monitors. And when it took off, they instinctively started going USA, USA, and it unified them, right? Because they had done this massive thing together by all these tiny little parts, and they all felt like they were part of it. And I think that's part of the magic of what Elon Musk is making such big, bodacious goals, like going to Mars. Actually,
however ridiculous, however ridiculous,
how many innovations are we going to make while we try to do this nearly impossible thing, right? I think there's some brilliance in that.
I don't know. Like, I think on a
small crazy, scale, who knows?
Just when I've been, like I said, that Rev A that has all these mistakes, and you finally get that piece working. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I even told engineering students over the years, that's what you're working for, is sometimes months of pain for that day that, and I always say, if it happens on a Friday, you go home early because it doesn't get any better than that feeling. But imagine that just amplified by 1,000 people all seeing that rocket go off. Oh my gosh. Like,
it was electric. And it was so inspiring. And, you know, it felt like that same national pride we had during the NASA program, right? You could feel that same sort of national pride, which is why they were chanting USA, right? It gave everyone something lofty to aspire to. And it was really, really, really cool to watch.
Once again, I think to me that is, and I'm guilty of this, guilty as charged through college, thinking all these classes with all these soft skills don't matter. I think of economics, like the accounting, organizational communication, some of the sociology, but the reality is to do big things, you need those pieces. And I wish I would have realized that sooner. I would have been a better engineer earlier in life. And maybe not have made so many mistakes. Not that the mistakes are bad, you learn from them, but you certainly, your sphere of the people that you can influence and be influenced by gets a lot bigger.
I'd love seeing student teams, because they organically onboard these soft skills because they have to, whether they want to or not. Mm-hmm. And they come out of those teams instinctively knowing the importance of communication, media, finance, budget, and they're making something really cool at the same time, which is really inspiring, like a Hyperloop pod or a, you know, electric car, whatever it is they're building, rockets. But they, not only do they have all engineering students on that team, they also have media people and business people to manage the budget, and they all come together and they get a little taste of, say, being like a startup, right? And I think, I'm sure at T0, you wear a lot of hats, right?
You do. And you're looking at the time when maybe you might not wear any, quite as many, but I think there's also some excitement in that. You get an idea of what the pieces are and that you can't be good at everything, and nor should you. You do it when you need to, but then again, there's also people who are just as good as you at what they do, and bringing them in is really important.
I think that's a really good point, actually, is outsourcing what you're not good at, you know, and leaning into your teammates. So I have a burning question as I've been listening to you. How did you learn this? How did you sort of onboard, you know, your sensibilities to be a little bit, you know, to think a little bit more about soft skills and thinking a little bit more holistically?
You know, part of it was, you know, I felt I was always pretty good at the technical aspects pretty early on, because I like to noodle with things on my own, whether it be in college through my first job. I was always noodling on whether it be guitar amplifiers or something, at always developing a skill. The other part of it, once I realized that I could take myself so far with building the thing, but eventually I wanted to get someone else to pay for it. And as practical as that, being able to sell an idea, think about even with inside of a company, even inside of small companies, it doesn't have to be that big, is if you have a good idea for something, you could spout off your facts all day about why it's better. But if you can't communicate it to the people who control budgets or control direction, right, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to develop some ability to interface with the bean counters, which I always argue, yeah, that's their job. That's what they have to be good at. Like, right, by definition, if that's what a business is. You count beans to make it work. But once I realized that, and I do remember a couple of distinct moments where maybe a supervisor says, you know what, I have no freaking clue what you're talking about. Like, and I felt bad, like I was wasting their time. They weren't trying to be malicious, but they truly just didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got that, till I realized, you know what, I'm in the weeds when I need to be talking big picture and be able to communicate it, right, in like one or two slides,
yeah,
what I'm trying to do. And once I got that, and once I realized, all right, these people aren't necessarily, they don't have PhDs in acoustics. They like, I don't need to be bringing out the big guns here. I just need to say,
right,
what am I trying to do, and what problem am I trying to solve? Mm-hmm. And here's a real practical story. I won't name names, but you'll get the idea of, I remember being at a job fair not a year or two ago for startups, and all these startups, T-Zero was there, at Penn State, showing off the cool things that they were doing. And all of it was really cool. And one startup had a really technical poster of, and they're trying to attract new talent, and they are trying to be super technical in what they do. And they explained all the government grants they got, and you read through this thing. And I went over there, I said, explain me what you do. And they went through all the whole stuff. So I said, you actually take people who can't walk and give them the ability to walk again. Physically, you give them legs. Like, why isn't that on your poster? I mean, that is a mission people can get behind.
Absolutely.
I understand you need all of these mechatronics to do that. But if you're trying to sell the dream,
right,
taking someone in a wheelchair and telling them they can walk again.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to them the story of, look up this video on YouTube of this young woman who was able to hear for the first time in her 30s, and looking at her reaction. That sells projects. Not the fact that I built this digital signal processor with all this code. That comes along. But if you want to sell the dream, you've got to be able to sell that. And some of that, yes, is emotional. You know, that's one of the three arguments, you know, the Greek philosophers said, you know, you'll have to make. And it's okay. So
you just gave me an idea, and I'm going to throw it in the show notes for our visitors, and I'll share it with you too, Eli. We sponsor a team in the Netherlands, Delft Technical University. And they have a team that makes an exoskeleton that helps paraplegics walk. Mm-hmm. And there's a competition called the Cybathon. And our videography flew out there and filmed this story, and it is wow. And these students don't have an advisor. They do it all themselves, and they want a competition against commercially funded companies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I want to join this team. I want to do, you know, so we of course gave them Altium designer licenses and like made a story about them. It's phenomenal. And yeah, like you said, that purpose, like with Elon Musk or NASA, these things are far more exciting. I think that's one of the reasons I love working at Altium, because they have big visions, right, for where they want to take with things like Altium 365, where you can collaborate in the cloud, and it's relevant right now. And it's exciting to be part of a team that has sort of a big vision and is doing really innovative things. So, well, I love it. Do you, any good books that you've read sort of around soft skills or anything impact you over the years? Do you have any? I didn't ask you this before. I'm sort of putting you on the spot.
No, that's fine. No, I have to admit. So, and my wife teases me about this. I tend to, anytime I do read anything, it's generally pretty technical. Because the soft skill thing, I really feel like that's developed kind of with other people all the in listening to other people talk. I do like to listen to a lot of podcasts, and I really like to observe and listen, especially on podcasts where you're talking about a deep subject where they can go into it. And I just like to listen to different styles of people and how they interact. For books, I actually am really into things like cosmology and things like that. And I really get into that. It's totally theoretical, and it's almost tickling the science fiction end of things. So,
you're such a nerd, Eli.
I am. well, that and two, once in a while, like if there's a book, like when I mentioned the example of like the Federal Reserve, I read some books on the creation of like the Federal Reserve, because I was just interested in like where that all came from. But yeah, the soft skills, because it's hard even in prose, when you see prose, is to capture what meaning is. But if you can listen to someone when they're talking about it, how they talk about it changes how you feel. And I think you need that aspect. It's really hard to capture on paper. I think some really good writers can. I think they're kind of far and few between that can really capture it, because you need a good writer. And I'm not a good reader, so I wish I was a better reader. To be a good reader, to read prose and really pull that out. But I don't know. I think that's where some of the, like, I go to the science fiction and fantasy realm. You learn a lot about the soft skills, because it's stories about humans, the problems they overcome, and all the things they need to do to solve that problem, which is more than just one circuit or one thing. It's pretty big.
So did you know, fun fact, that Eric Bogdan has written science fiction novels?
I did not know that.
Yes, I have two of them. I'll put those links before to his author page. So you would love them. I just know from what you're talking about, because I love science fiction too. And the first one is called, one is S's for Space. The other one is Shadow Engineer, I think it's called. Anyways, I'll put the links below.
I think a lot of engineers come from that ilk.
I think so too.
Growing up, Star Trek was huge. That drove the engineering, but it was, I didn't know it at the time, but the underlying human things that you run into, it was the purpose side of it. Is like, yeah, we have this ship, we have all this stuff, but we're going to see all this new stuff. And for me, and this is where it breaks off from engineering, is engineering is about parameters, things you know, solving problems. But there's a bigger question of, if you could possibly know everything, would you want to? And someone posed that question to me, and I'm like, I like not knowing, and I like knowing that there's something out of reach. There's something just far enough that no matter how hard I try, I can't get my arms around it, because I feel when you're trying to grow personally, you should always be doing things where you're feeling uncomfortable, where that thing, whether it be trying to understand something new with a tool or in engineering or in life, it's got to be just out of reach, because I feel like humans do really well there. That's that really magical spot where
So are you saying then, are you encouraging our listeners to perhaps get out during this COVID time to get out of their comfort zone and stretch a little bit?
I think so. And now is the time. So here is the thing. And I had a colleague who I just called out of the blue. I hadn't talked to him for 2 months. And I was getting a little worried because we had always were talking and his work started to really kind of dry up as a consultant. I figured, you know, I'm going to call and check in, not because I'm looking for anything other than saying, hey, what's up? And he was still doing some work, but he was actually taking the time. He was doing the thing we always say we should be doing. It's like, well, I want to learn about this, but I never have the time. Well, guess what? You're stuck in your freaking basement. You have all the time in the world, whether it be the new tool or the new chip or the new thing. Like, now is the time. It's not like you're going to go out and party all night. Going to restaurants is really hard. Getting there with people is a little harder, but you do have some time right now. There's not really any excuses to be learning that new thing.
Eli, thanks again for joining and thanks for sharing all this. And I trust along the lines of the Lee Ritchie video we did, we've done the series kind of with this theme of we call them On Track Insights, where we interviewed and got sort of the human story behind people like Rick Hartley and Lee Ritchie and Eric Bogatin, and sort of found out what made them tick, you know, how they became engineers earlier in their career and whatever. And so it's sort of a look behind some of our leaders in the industry. So I'll share those on YouTube also. I think you would enjoy them too. So
awesome.
Thanks again for joining us. Stay warm there, my friend, and don't go too crazy. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. To our listeners, thanks so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with myself and Eli Hughes of T-Zero. We look forward to being with you next time. Until then, stay healthy, stay safe, and always remember to stay on track.